Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and I'm excited for another great episode. With me today is Nick Rethel. Nick, did I say that right?
Yes, you sure did, Todd.
Awesome. So Nick is with Content Core, and they are basically helping authors write their stories, write their books. And I'll let Nick kind of tell about his experience. I think what they're doing is really cool. So Nick, why don't you tell us a little bit about what your business is, what Content Core is, and then tell us a little bit more about your background. Where did you come from and how did you really get into this unique business?
Absolutely. Well, to give you, Todd, and to give your listeners some background, what we're doing is we're doing something called the 7-Hour Book. And the 7-Hour Book is a system that allows anyone, specifically these days in real estate investors, but anyone as well, in business who has an idea and who needs a book to position themselves for more clients, for more investors, or for more leads in general for their business. So we make it very easy for them to get their own professionally done book in just 7 hours of their time. Just 7 hours of their time talking to us over the phone or over Skype.
Okay. I'm gonna challenge you a little bit because 7 hours seems like a really short amount of time to write a book. And if I'm talking, let's just say 150-page book, is that work for the 7 hours?
It would, depending on the content and depending on the material and what the person themselves wanted to do once they had the book.
Okay. So how do you get it to where somebody can write a book in 7 hours and yet still make it their own book and not your author's books? Because I'm assuming you've got experienced writers, marketers, that kind of thing, taking care of the fine details. So how do we get it to where it's uniquely ours?
Well, I want to be clear on something as we're talking about this. Yeah. Might put it in better context. First, the person we're working with, they only, on their side, are spending 7 hours, 7 total 1-hour calls talking to us. On our side, we're spending a whole lot more than just 7 hours. I don't think really that anything of quality could be created in terms of a book, at least on the back end, on our side, in 7 hours. I mean, that would definitely require tons of caffeine, tons of energy drinks, if nothing else.
Superhuman strengths.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So if I'm going to write a book in 7 hours, obviously, you know, anybody that's doing it is going to want it, like I said, to be uniquely theirs. When you're doing it, I'm just trying to think about, you know, how would this work? Are you interviewing somebody for an hour and then you're
pulling things out of that, and then the next call you're doing the same thing. Is that how you're doing it, or how you don't have to give away all your secrets, of course, but just tell me kind of, again, how do you make it uniquely yours?
Sure. We make it uniquely theirs, the person we're working with, mm-hmm. by, as you put it, Todd, working with them, doing those interviews, pulling the ideas essentially out of their head, and then applying those ideas that we pull to various frameworks and templates that we have based on their goals, or more recently, based on their profession. Okay. Because I say based on their profession more recently, because we are niching down these days toward REI specifically. Because okay. we found, interestingly, that a lot of real estate investors have a need for a book in order to specifically attract investors to their firms, whether for a syndication or for some kind of other financing arrangement that they want to do. They need to attract investors and raise that capital. So we've devised more recently a specific framework tailored to real estate investors. And in that context, we're doing the interviews as we normally would, but we're then applying it even more specifically to this template that's just for them.
Cool. I know I'm not going to be able to ask you names of books, or I could ask you, but you're not going to give them to me. Some of these books that you guys have done and released, would the normal listener recognize some of those books?
Well, if you're thinking Tools for the Titans and, you know, Crush It, Gary Vaynerchuk, unfortunately, we're probably not. I can probably safely say that we didn't do Tim Ferriss's book or Gary V's book. But in general, I think it's hard to say. It's hard to say because it would depend on how much of, for lack of a better word, a bookworm the listener is. I mean, is this someone who's deep into the investing section of their local library or the bookstore, or are they just merely browsing a couple of the titles on Amazon?
Sure. I don't think you probably didn't do whatever. I got the Tools of Titans. I'm sitting here looking at it. It's like 700 pages long or whatever that is. That probably would have taken more than 7 hours of interviews, my guess. take us through, you know, how did you get into deciding that this was a good, business, and why should people come to you? Well, that's kind of two questions. So start out with, why did you decide that this was a good business to get into?
Well, came into the idea of it being a worthwhile business, for really, really two reasons. First, the idea of books as more than just something that's fun to read before you go to bed at night. The idea that a book can actually serve a unique business purpose to educate your audience and to really prove that you, whether you're a real estate investor, whether you're a business entrepreneur of some other sort, that you have something unique to share and that you're not like every other investor or every other broker or every other, if you're coming even from an e-commerce background, every other e-commerce guy out there. So really that a book can become something more, and it can even be, depending on your age and depending on the amount of things you've done thus far, it can even be a measure of leaving a legacy. So this book actually becomes something lasting that survives long after you to transmit your ideas and to inspire people in the future. I mean, the idea that a book can do all of these things is fascinating, and it's inspiring, I think, in and of itself to anyone who's thinking of doing it. So that would be one of the things that really sort of opened my eyes to this being a business and being something that would be worthwhile to do. Then the other side of it is the time and the productivity aspect. The idea that people recognize the power of a book, as I have, but are limited. They really are limited in running their businesses, having families, all of the other demands of life. And so many people, unfortunately, they want to put a book out and they're like, yeah, I have these great ideas. Or people are telling them you should write a book, but it's always, almost always coming down to that time issue. So if you think about that and you think about, ironically, Tim Ferriss and his kind of productivity, how do you hack it? And what is the life hack, if you will, that you can figure out in the productivity hack to make books accessible to these people who have the ideas, or maybe they don't have the ideas, but they know they should do a book? How do you make that accessible to them? And that's really what led me into thinking about how we could do it in 7 hours, which is our present system.
Yeah. I mean, that resonates with, you know, what you're saying is if you're a busy, you know, if you're a business owner, you're busy. You don't, at least you probably should be. Right. And so you don't have a ton of time to write a book. So if you're going to write a book, it's a commitment and a full commitment. And even with a 7 hour book, you're going to commit, right? I'm sure you are going to have a lot more success with the person, a business owner, an investor, whatever, that's going to fully commit during that time and truly be thoughtful, you know, and focused on what they're doing versus somebody who's just kind of just trying to get something done, scramble and get it done as quick as they can. Am I right? I mean, if you got somebody that's committed to it, they're going to have better success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's important for them to be committed, not just in the sense of sort of going through the motions with us,
right,
but also it really helps if they're committed in the mental sense too.
Yeah.
That it's something that they're thinking about beyond just our calls. That, for example, if we use a system called Trello to organize a lot of our projects, project management software called Trello, and we love the kinds of people who will actually take an active interest and post their own thoughts, their own ideas, and really make the Trello board theirs.
Yeah.
That kind of a commitment is great to see, because the book is not just going to end up being something that sounds good and achieves its purpose, but it's something that they personally will use.
Yep.
And will innovate and will hopefully do a lot of stuff with on their own, even beyond us.
Yeah, because when you write a book, you want your personality to get it into that book. You want it to feel like you are the one talking. So I think if the more you get into it, the more emotionally and mentally involved you are, my guess is the better that book would be. And I think doing a book is really interesting, because, you know, I write blog posts and post them on LinkedIn and Bigger Pockets and stuff like that. But a book doesn't get thrown away. I mean, very rarely I don't know if I've ever thrown a book away. I've got books that I've had for forever, and it just doesn't seem like they get thrown away. And if they do, you know, not very often, I guess. So I think it's something that continues and lasts. You know, if you give a gift of a book to somebody, they may not read it, but at least, you know, it's sitting on their bookshelf. They can see your name. They can see the title. They know that you wrote it. There's credibility there versus just having a couple blog posts. They're never looking at that. They don't even, you know you have written a blog post. And it's so many short little stories on a blog post versus a book, as you put it all together and it's your own content. So I think, you know, what you're offering is a really cool solution to, you know, that problem of, do I have the time to write a full book and sit down like Tim Ferriss and write a 700 page book? That's just unreal amount of time. Well, Nick, let's talk about kind of a little bit about the business and how you're having success with your business. What are the things that you are doing and you need to do in order to make sure you're being successful and you're allowing your customers to be successful?
One of the things that comes to mind right off the top of my head is, ironically, since we're talking about 7 hours and that is time blocking. Whether that's time blocking in the sense of the calls we're doing with our clients or time blocking on my end with handling other priorities, assigning things to different members of my team, and really just allocating time, having those time blocks. And I would encourage anyone listening to this, if you're not familiar with Gary Keller's The One Thing, Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, their book, The One Thing, definitely give that a read because they talk about time blocking in there. And it's this idea of having specific portions of your day or specific points in your schedule where you've blocked off an hour or 2 hours to only focus on one piece of work or one objective that needs to be taken care of. And regardless of what else is going on, regardless of what other things might come up, you are spending that 1 hour or that 2 hours or however much time it is. And I would say that in terms of getting things done, time blocking is one of those things that once you really wrap your head around it and get comfortable doing it, it just allows you to make so much progress so much faster. So I would recommend that certainly as one of the big things.
Cool. Anything else that sticks out into, you know, how your business has been evolving and becoming more successful?
I'd say another thing is don't be afraid to begin offloading some of the responsibility to others.
Yes.
I would say you smile as I'm saying this, Todd, so I'm sure you understand as well, but just the importance of not trying to, whether it's just you or whether it's just you and like one or two other people, not trying to everyone who is in sort of that small group do it all on your own. Understand that, you know, you can have a partner or another partner, but even if you're in a group like that, you guys shouldn't be afraid to hand off some responsibility to still more people. You know, it sounds silly, and we all learn it in elementary school or middle school that team, you know, together everyone achieves more, TEAM, but it's so true. It really is so true. So don't be afraid to scale as long as you one, understand the importance of your customers and don't lose sight of them as you're scaling, so the quality is still there. And then also don't scale so fast that suddenly, you know, you don't have the SOPs, the standard operating procedures, and the framework to keep up with the scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, don't scale too slow. Don't wait too long to scale. And like you said, don't go too fast where you just can't keep control of it. I laugh because I'm that type of person that likes that control. You know, I know I can do a lot of things really well. And so handing things off to somebody, it's like, well, I can do it just as good as them. But once you start doing everything, it's like, I can't do everything all at once and still be effective. You just can't, you know, even if you're very good at that one thing that you just handed off, if you try to do it all, you're just not going to be effective. And I'm assuming there's plenty more than just you in this company, because you can't write all these books just yourself and you can't do all these interviews. And so you have to have a really good team, probably marketers and all that kind of stuff, in order to be successful. Talk about, you know, how did you go out and start finding those types of people, to be, you know, to help your company and your success, you know, and how did that process go?
Well, in terms of finding people and kind of scaling like that, I mean, it really is one of those things that it's is kind of a rough process as you go through it. There's really no, I mean, unless, you know, you're Accenture or Bain or one of these huge companies that has a very smooth, refined, you know, hiring process. And, you know, we're certainly not like that.
Yeah. Well, especially when you first start, right? I mean, nobody's like that.
You don't. Nor I would imagine are any of your listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. You just don't have a name yet. So you can't, you know, you can't just put an ad out there and everybody's going to know that you're Amazon and that, you know, they just want to work for you.
One of the things that I think is very important to do early on as you're looking to hire people is to ask those you currently work with who are currently your star players, if you will, ask them who their friends are and sort of work through their network, because as they say, birds of the feather flock together. So if you have A players and you have people who you work with or who you employ who are very good at what they do, chances are they're not hanging around with losers, or at least people who aren't up to their caliber work-wise, and they can refer you to people who'd be very good.
Okay, so good information so far. Anything else that we can, you know, take from that?
Yeah, I would say that certainly work through the networks of the people you're working with, their friends, their colleagues. Another good one would be to look on the website Fiverr, and you can, there are ways of covertly recruiting people from that website, initiating contact with them through attachments and through messages to them, and then beginning a conversation with them off of Fiverr, where you can talk about recruiting them for more of a long-term gig with your organization. So that would be very good when you find talented people. And then there's really just a variety of other things you could do, from putting up ads locally on Craigslist. That can be good, especially if you're looking for people who you can work with locally and get a chance to know them, see them face to face, and establish a greater layer of trust. And then I think co-working spaces can also be pretty good, in the sense that you put up a job ad, it's much more of an organic and local atmosphere, which again has its strengths. And it's often, because it's a co-working space, of a higher degree and a higher cut than Craigslist or some of these, I don't want to say lower down, but some of these more casual forums.
Yeah, forums that you really have to weed through a lot more. You know, on Craigslist, there's a lot of noise out there, I guess, for lack of better terms. Well, that's great. I mean, I think recruiting and finding people is definitely one of the more difficult things as a small business, especially, you know, as you're getting started and you're deciding to take that first leap. I know for me, I have a very hard time not being able to see that person and trust them, you know, to make sure that they're actually, you know, trustworthy and going to do what I want them to do. So, you know, there's a lot of barriers to break through as you're hiring new people, and you're putting a lot of trust in them and hoping that they're going to grow your business and not cost you money. So, but it's definitely an important step to take.
Well, something I would add is, we're talking about all this that really helps with the trust and knowing, can this person perform, is to understand what Simon Sinek of the TED Talks and of the Golden Circle, his group, what he calls your why. He's very big on this idea of finding your why, but I think that a lot of people lose sight of the fact that it's not just your why that's important. It's the why of the people in your organization as well, and the people you're hiring. Because knowing your why is great, and it helps you to find your purpose and to know why you get out of bed each morning. And that's all very important, of course. But you need to also understand the why of the people you're employing, the people who are in your networks, the people who you're looking to for guidance and for help. Because if you know their why, then you can, for example, structure your compensation packages in a way that attracts them. You can assign them things and duties in the workplace that's in line with their why, so they're much more likely to follow through and execute on it because it's consistent and because it's helping them to achieve some sort of an objective that they feel is important.
Yeah, that is great. Fantastic advice right there. I actually haven't heard anybody say anything like that. And that's powerful right there. It's not all about yourself, right? Especially a lot of people's why. My why is to affect a lot of people in a positive way. Well, then you got to think about what their why is. And that's how you're truly going to positively affect them, is if you think about their why. So if you want your business to become successful and powerful, you're 100% right on there. Is you've got to think about who's in your organization, who's in your network, who are you dealing with, who are your customers, and what's their why. So awesome. I love that. Thank you for that. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about some of the biggest mistakes you've made, challenges, whether it's with, you know, Content Core or with other companies you've been a part of, other, you know, aspects. So biggest mistakes, and how did you learn and grow from it?
Well, one of the biggest mistakes was certainly what we were just talking about, not scaling soon enough, trying to do it all, shoulder the burden on my shoulders for too long. That was certainly one. Not wisening up sooner to the need to scale, outsource, all of that.
Yeah.
Beyond that, another one that I'm sure I know I've suffered from, and I know a lot of people listening to this who probably suffered from too, is shiny object syndrome. Mm-hmm. The idea that there's all these ideas and possibilities out there. How do you narrow down? How do you choose what your one thing is? How do you choose what you're going to devote the majority of your time to? So shiny object syndrome, 100% has been a major one. By the way, on that, when speaking of shiny object syndrome, we always talk about the problem, but there isn't nearly as much discussion given to the solution. So I would suggest that anyone who struggles with that, as I have, one of the best ways to get a grip and a handle on shiny object syndrome is to know your why, and to know what your mission and purpose are, know what your goals are, know what's important. Because once you have your framework, your mission and purpose, your goals clearly, and I mean clearly defined, then it becomes a whole lot easier to pass on various ideas you see, because you simply weigh them against, is this in alignment? Does this further, does this support what I feel is important?
Well, and to piggyback on that, once you have a new opportunity or that new shiny object that comes, if you've got that clear defined goal and that why, like you said, if you ask, does this help me accomplish my goals, my why, you need to be able to say no, even if it can make you a few bucks, right? Because it's going to be a major distraction that's probably going to lose you money in the end. Is this going to help you grow your business? Is it going to help with your why? And if the answer is no, probably the smartest thing to do is just step away and not do it. And I think you're right. I mean, everybody, especially real estate investors, we get caught up with the shiny object syndrome all the time. And I hear it from people that I network with. I hear it from Bigger Pockets, and people just get caught up in that shiny object. It's the next best thing, and that's where they're going to go. And entrepreneurs in general, I think we're all very driven and motivated. And so shiny objects can knock us off course really quick.
So. Well, especially as entrepreneurs, the shiny object, we're talking about it in a negative context, and it can be very negative. Yeah. But the fact that our minds are even open enough to consider all of these opportunities, I think is certainly a strength. Well, the fact that we're not so set in our ways that when new opportunities come along, we're not at least interested, and our minds are not at least thinking a couple of steps ahead as to how this could be something that we would become involved in. I think that's important, though.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And you, I think an important point with that is you can't just push it off, right? You do have, you should think about it, because a lot of times, you know, businesses evolve and grow and change, and we need to make sure we're keeping up with that and continue to grow our business and not just stuck in what's comfortable. So if you just push everything off to the side and don't even think about it and just are focused on the one thing that you're doing, you might miss out on truly opportunities that could grow your business. So understanding that, yeah, we have to make sure it aligns with our business, but we should, like you said, we should be looking at those things, and it's a good thing actually, but we just don't want to do things that are going to hurt our growth in the end.
You know, another tip I would give on how to deal with these shiny objects and how to, as we've been saying, stay open-minded too, is to keep a journal specifically for your ideas, writing down all the ideas that come to your mind, and then setting it aside, whether that's for a day, whether that's for a week, whether it's the sort of thing that you put some of these ideas off to only look at in the new year, the new quarter, and look at them in time, because ideas are often in the same way as wine, where they get better with time, or they're in the case of fruit, where they actually end up getting worse over time and they rot. But having that perspective and being able to come back to ideas, ideas that seemed so amazing at the time, and seeing whether or not they really are still as amazing and as appearing as though you've thought up the next Uber, when you come back to them later on. So having perspective for your ideas is important, and a journal and an ideas log helps you to do that.
Cool. That's awesome. Okay. So let's talk about your business and you personally. What are your goals moving forward? What's the next, what does 10 years from now look like, or 5 years, whatever you've got set up? What does that look like? Where's the future headed?
Goodness, asking the big questions.
Yeah.
I guess it's only right, since we're recording this right around the end of 2017, looking ahead to the new year. Our goals then coming up are certainly to do more books, help more people to get their message out, help them to advance in their businesses more. Specifically then, niching down a lot more than we have been toward real estate and real estate investing specifically. It happens to be an area that I'm personally very interested in. And we're also seeing that it really is one of those things that many of our clients are coming to us from. They're coming to us as real estate investors who either have a personal story that they want to get out, or they want to attract investors for syndication, or they want to also go into coaching and some kind of an info products position, maybe even doing some consulting, maybe doing some more speaking. But we're really looking to niche further down into real estate investing. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to be doing books, for example, your dentist, or for, you know, your doctors, your coaches, and other professions. But on the whole, we are beginning to take a lot more of an interest and a lot more of a focus toward those who are in real estate and real estate investing specifically.
Sure. Well, that makes sense to you know, have your focus or your niche, because that's only going to probably make those books even better as you can continue to see, you know, the needs in that field and be able to focus in that field, I would assume. So give us, one thing. You've kind of maybe talked about this already, but give us one thing that you do differently in your business to maybe for, you know, better growth, or, you know, just something that maybe you change a little bit.
Something that we would change, or something that we do change?
It could be both. Yeah. You could talk about something you've already changed that, you know, has helped with your business too.
time blocking is certainly something that has made all the difference in terms of a change. I would also say, and this might seem a little bit unusual, but one of the things that has made a difference has been instituting more or less a mandatory stop time per day, in the sense that it's all too easy, if you're not careful, to work around the clock, not taking a break, and burn yourself out.
Sure.
And to cut down on sleep. But it makes such a difference if you have, say, a mandatory stop time at, depending on your business, 6 p.m. or 8 p.m. or 9 p.m., heck, even 11 or 12 o'clock at night, but having some kind of a clear time in mind at which point you are going to stop. Because then we get into what's called Parkinson's principle, where, as they say, the task expands to fit the amount of time you give it. So if you only give yourself X amount of time in a given day to work, magically, you more often than not find a way to get everything done by that end point. It's the same way as if you're rushing off to the airport on a given day. And so you have to do this meeting, you have to send all these emails out, you have to do all of this stuff before a certain time of the day when that car is coming to pick you up and you are going to the airport. Suddenly, everything gets done. Whereas on a normal day, when you have much more time, the work stretches out to fit the amount of time you have on that expanded day.
Yeah, that makes, that's all too familiar. That makes a lot of sense, definitely. Yeah, I had a problem with that too. I mean, and I still at some time struggle with it because I love what I do, so it's easy to get caught up in it. But, you know, you got to have your own separate life as well. Like you said, you've got to have those certain hours. And for me, it's I have to have my family time, because otherwise, if I don't have time with my kids and my wife, and just am caught up in my work, you're going to miss, you know, your kids. You're going to miss how they grew up. You're going to, you know, not be a part of their lives. So there's also other important things, and time to reset as well. And like you said, scheduling, you know, you'll get amazingly as much or more done when you have a timeline on it. So yeah, I love it.
Something I would add to this discussion of time blocking and certain times of day that you do things, give yourself, when you're planning your schedule, give yourself times of the week or of a given day when you are allowed to be lazy. And what I mean by that is it's easier to be disciplined and to drive yourself and to push yourself hard when you can say and you can know in your mind that you've had points when you've been very lazy, impulses. And those impulses and those lazy points are essentially scheduled into your time. So whether that's every Sunday afternoon, watch the football game, or every Friday evening after 7 p.m., you allow yourself to socialize with others online. Hopefully not just online, hopefully at the bars and restaurants and stuff too. Yeah. But
a little face-to-face never hurt anybody.
It's certainly not. But scheduling in kind of these lazy moments or these moments when it's okay for you to watch things on YouTube. It's okay for you to watch the trailer for that movie that's coming out that everyone's forwarding and messaging you on Facebook. Oh, you got to check this out. No, not at the points when you're working, but during these lazy moments that you've already blocked off ahead of time.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And you give yourself that time. Okay. So what's you've recommended a couple books already. You've talked about a few books. What's a book that you would recommend for all of us?
Well, coming from a books background, this is going to be a little bit difficult, but
maybe we should preface this as, what's a book that you would recommend that you haven't helped you know, right. Maybe I shouldn't pigeonhole that, but yeah, go ahead.
There's tons and tons of books out there. I would, yeah, this is tough, even for ones that we've not had a hand in. I would recommend then that people look back a couple of centuries to older things. I'm a big fan of looking back, for example, on the motivational side, to the motivators and the inspiring figures who've talked earlier on. Everyone from James Allen, for example, As a Man Thinketh. I mean, that book, for example, it's an interesting book because when you read it, it's essentially like you're attending a Tony Robbins seminar 200 or 300 years before Tony Robbins came around. And there's a number of other books like that. I believe historically they're tied to what's been called the New Thought Movement, which then guys like Earl Nightingale and some of the more recent people have adopted. But it's very interesting to look back a century, two centuries more to see where these ideas that suddenly are so groundbreaking. Or another example, there was, I forget his name, but there's a guy who has a book about being driven and, you know, unstoppable today. And his book is essentially Emerson's Self-Reliance, except it's been tailored and adapted and changed for more of a crush it, Gary Vee, even a little bit of hip hop audience. And it's just interesting to see these old ideas from books that are ancient by today's standards being repurposed. So I think that would be a good place for people to look if they want to get inspired by reading.
Yeah, that isn't that something, you know, we have been thinking about, you know, we feel like it's we're so evolved and we're thinking so, you know, so much about how we can become better. And but people have been thinking about that for forever. I mean, you talk about these books that were written, you know, 100 plus, a lot of them way more than that ago, and they're thinking the same way as we're thinking now. So it's not like it's something new. So yeah, great. I love it. As a Man Thinketh, I'm going to try that one. I've heard of it.
I would add another one to the list, which gets some circulation, but isn't as widely known as some of these books. It's Russell, I believe it's Russell Conway, Acres of Diamonds. And that's a really good book to read because it reminds you that while there are all these resources and ideas and articles and books out there, oftentimes the things that can be of most use to you, you already have. I mean, it's a philosophical take on that often corny movie idea of, you know, you had it in you all along. Well, yeah, in many cases you do have it in you or in your organization all along, and you don't necessarily need to be out there searching for the magic pill, the magic ingredient, the one extra thing you need to add in, the one missing puzzle piece, when if you just look at your strengths and you look at the things you already have, you'll find more often than not that you have, in the book sense, these acres of diamonds. And I won't give away what the context is for Acres of Diamonds in the book, but it's certainly a story worth reading.
Yeah, that's that self-reflection, right? And being able to really look at, like you said, where your strengths are. Powerful. Cool. Well, I appreciate all the information. Last question. What is your definition to the secret of financial freedom?
Perspective. I think perspective is the secret, because if you have perspective, you can think, for example, of generational wealth, and you can begin to build your wealth in the sense that it'll last for generations. You won't end up like a friend of mine, a fellow podcaster, I think you're familiar with him too, Todd, MC Lobster, what he talks about of the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts. You know, whereas one of them sort of had fast money and the other one, the Rockefellers, had generational wealth in the sense that it's still around today.
Yeah.
So perspective is important. having that perspective also helps you avoid, for example, the day trader mentality. And there's nothing wrong per se with day traders. I mean, you can certainly do well in that profession and in that line. But especially when we're talking about real estate, for example, which tends to outperform the stock market, as they say. When we're talking about real estate in bigger assets like that, you really need perspective. And you really need a sense that this is something long-term, this is something lasting. Yeah. And you definitely, with that perspective, will be able to, you'll be better equipped to look at the financials and think, okay, this might be how it's performing this year, but what's it going to look like 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and even if you're the type who just buys and holds 20 years or longer, how's that going to contribute to your wealth?
Yep. Yeah, great. I like that answer. It's an answer I've not been given yet, so I like it. I like it a lot. Well, Nick, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on our show, and tons of valuable, very valuable insights. At the end of the show, I always give my three takeaways out of what I got, and it's going to be hard to narrow those down. So I've got a lot of notes that I've written down already. So how do people get in touch with you if they're interested in the 7-hour book, or if they're just interested in learning more about your company or talking to you? How do they get in touch with you?
The best way would be to go to our website. It's just contentcore.net, and that's spelled contentcorps.net, contentcore, like the Marine Corps, .net.
Perfect. I will put that on the show notes as well, so people can click on that and check out what you're doing and get in touch with you if they want to learn more. I appreciate you being on the show.
It's been a pleasure to be here, and I'm really happy to have contributed to your audience.
Yeah, I think you did a fantastic job. Have a great rest of the day, Nick.
You too, Todd. Take care.
All right. I want to give a special thanks to Nick for coming on the show and taking his time out of his day, giving us some valuable insights. Check out his webpage and give Nick a shout to learn more about how you create a book in 7 hours. Some great things I took from the show. One is time blocking, allocating your time and really paying attention to what you're doing. So make sure you're time blocking. I've just actually started doing that now that I heard this episode and talked to Nick. And so now I've been taking and really dialing my day out hour by hour and even more detailed than that when I can. So it's really helped me focus on what I need to be getting done. I look at the clock and then I look at what my list says and I go, oh, geez, I got to speed up. And if I do end up getting ahead of time, I try to continue to get ahead and ahead and ahead, and then I can take a break, maybe read a book for a little while, something like that. So it's been really helpful for me to time block. So I appreciate that advice from Nick. Then the next thing is don't be afraid to hand off responsibility. That's one thing, again, that I struggle with quite a bit is handing off responsibility, giving other people the opportunity. A lot of people want to help you. A lot of people want to be a part of exciting businesses. So if you've got something that's powerful and exciting and things, fun, people want to be a part of it. People want to learn from you. Most of the time they're going to expect to get paid. Not always actually even will they expect to get paid. It could be a mutual beneficial relationship for both of you. So don't be afraid to hand off responsibility. Don't be afraid to hire people when it's time to hire people. And then the last thing is, what's your why? And not necessarily just your why. That's important to know. But how Nick said it, which I think was great, is what's the why of your organization? What's the why of your company? And understanding then the why of your employees and your networks, so you can then mold everything together. So having a strong value, strong why for your business, I think is really important. Not just a personal why, but a why for your company is really important as well. So I really appreciate those items of advice from Nick and everything else that he gave us. And appreciate him coming on the show. I'm Todd Dexheimer. I am signing off. Go on to, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever, and share this show out and give us a 5-star rating review. Remember, make every day a Saturday.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's NORADA realestate.com.